Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the WPTF Weekend Gardener. I guess this is our third chapter as we've celebrated two 40-year anniversaries, one for John Harris at the end of his tenure 40 years ago, and then ours last weekend officially. And so we start anew, and we're so glad to have our friend Gerald Adams out here this morning. Gerald, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. I have to apologize for missing last weekend's festivities, but I had a grandson's birthday up in Virginia.
Well, that's a lot more
to
important.
Attend to, so yeah, we was up there.
I understand that. Well, we had a great time. Brother Rufus is on the line with us. Sir?
Morning, Gerald.
Good morning, Rufus. Hope you get the feeling better.
Well, you can't get an old mountain boy down too long.
You got the distemper.
I got what they call the black bile.
Or the grip. Well, we're glad you're feeling better, definitely. Yeah, we had a pretty good time out there, didn't we, Rufus?
Oh, man, we sure did. Everybody in the world came paying tribute to our leader, Gerald.
I don't think they came to pay tribute to me, but they, you know, Tony Avent came and Nelson and a lot of other, Pam Beck, and they stayed a long time just talking to each other. I mean, after they got off the air, so it was kind of a reunion, sort of.
It's like the old gang is back.
Right, and my whole family was out there, and immediate family, and we had, my grandsons didn't tear up anything, so.
No, they were rambunctious.
Yeah, they're pretty wild. That's pretty standard operating procedure. But they had plenty of room to run.
The food was fantastic.
Oh, my gosh, it was wonderful. It was so good. And I talked to Phil yesterday, checking on her, and because I know she was tired out by all of that. But she did such a wonderful job, and I appreciate the folks at the station coming out to support us, salesman and management, our general manager and our vice president for news, Josh and Carolyn. So, I think it was a big success.
So, I wouldn't want to repeat it every Saturday because I'd weigh 400 pounds.
Oh, so yeah, I saw you. I didn't get much of a chance to talk to you after the show because you were politicking over there. I see you had yourself set up at a table.
Getting pneumonia. Didn't quite know it yet.
Yeah. And we had a big meeting on Sunday night, too. And you were funny as usual and, in charge. And you did an amazing job to be sickly.
Well, we had a very wonderful gathering, and just remember, you have to be asked.
That's right. You just can't barge in. We got security. I mean, we got law enforcement.
And be a member of the club. You got to pass the CIA, the Chitlin' Investigative Agency. And so So that's what a lot of people don't understand. They think they can just show up. No, sir.
No, no.
It's the requirements. And, of course, Gerald knows, you know, and we had a couple of people that had to learn the lesson the wrong way because their names were not on the list. They hadn't been praised and passed upon by the CIA. So
they had to be turned away. Well, that's pretty standard operating procedure for a mega organization like that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was riding yesterday, and I saw I'm seeing the Okami cherries blooming, and they are beautiful. The ones I've seen were just gorgeous. Some around Crabtree, others out around what's the Raleigh orthopedic place? There's some out there.
That's a real pink.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you, that is a nice, nice deep pink. And on the Beltline, the winter jasmine is blooming. Now they have, it looks like forsythia, but it has the green flowing kind of weeping stems and the yellow flowers on them, and then they have some fragrance. But they're blooming,
and it always blooms before the forsythia.
Right. Although I have had some forsythia blooming this winter.
Wow.
I know, it's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. But I've had a little bit, a few flowers pop up here and there. So you just never know what you're going to see. My Daphne is trying its best to bloom, Rufus. How about yours?
Well, I was just looking out my window right now at this fantastic Prunus Lumae. By some of the storm a while back. But it's just magnificent. And I can't quite check. I took a little walk yesterday. Here's what I've got. Of course, we've got camellias blooming. I've got winter clematis. I've got crocus. Got cyclamen. Got some winter daphne just about ready to pop out. It's worthy, of course. No drop. Good old hellebore. Grape holly. Grape hyacinth. Something I call squill. Is that a bulb, Gerald?
Squealed?
S-Q-I-L-L, like a pig?
Yes, yes.
What is that? I never heard of that. What does it look like, Rufus?
A little blue thing that looks, it's not very big. It looks sort of like a muscari.
Oh, wow. Can you buy the bulbs around, or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Will you look for squeal?
Yeah. All right. Say, okay, squeal for me one time.
Do they squeal? Yeah. So, Gerald, I don't know how much of an ornamentalist you are. You're growing so many tomatoes and seeds and peppers and all kinds of stuff. You probably don't deal in that too much. Do you have anything out there? Did you say winter honeysuckle was blooming at your place?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think yours has been blooming for a while.
No, last year I planted a number of Confederate roses so I would have some to take cuttings off for the future.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
If somebody wanted some. I've got moringa trees that I grow from seed that are up about
moringa six trees. Now, yep. Well, there's another one. Is that any kind of squeal?
Tree of life.
Oh, okay.
You know, drumstick tree, some people call it. If you're not familiar with
those are the hungry people.
Moringa, M-O-R-I-N-G-A. It is everything about it's edible, and everything about it do something to make you better. Lower your blood sugar, blood pressure, all kinds of things.
You know, on the bark.
Two things. Most people take the leaves and dry them and grind them in a powder and sprinkle a teaspoon over the food, or you can eat the nuts that it's produced. It produces a little small nut, but, you know, not as big as the end of your finger. It's got a little thin, hard shell. And a lot of people eat one or two of them a day to lower their blood sugar.
Well, Gerald, I'm stand out in line for a Confederate rose.
Okay. I can take care of that.
That is just such a wonderful, wonderful plant.
I thought you had one. Are you hoarding them, or are you going to give one away?
Yes, I am. I'm hoarding.
Okay.
Do they make seeds?
They will, but it's a lot better off to take a cutting off of them right before the freeze hits them.
Right.
Because they grow pretty fast from that.
They grow tall.
That cutting will have blooms on it.
How tall do they grow, Gerald?
I've seen them 12 foot tall probably before, and maybe, almost 8-10 foot wide.
And they bloom when?
They bloom fall and sometimes late fall.
Right.
I have seen a bloom or two in September before,
mm-hmm.
but most of the time it's October and even November when you see them blooming. And each year it's like your perennial hibiscus. The clump gets a little bigger each year, so gets it wider, and then the growths get a little taller and taller.
And do you cut them down?
Yes.
After they bloom?
After it freezes on them, you whack everything back to the ground, and it'll send up brand new growth each year, and it gets happy quick. But it stays in the clump, just slowly gets bigger. It's not going to run all over.
Okay.
Everywhere.
Well, I can see why people love them so much.
Dixie Rose Mallow, if you can't find Confederate Rose when you go scrambling online. But the bloom really, to me, looks like a giant peony. I mean, it's a spectacular bloom. And even though it's hot pink, sometimes there'll be different shades of pink, and the ruffles on them will be a little bit different. So there's some difference in the blooms on the same plant.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of interesting things, a lot of interesting plants out there right now that people should have in their landscape. Now, what about, we better get to some tomato talk here because we talked to Craig LaHoulier last week, Gerald, and he and his family are doing a lot better after all of the problems with Helene. They were affected for a good while. I don't think they had a lot of damage, but they were affected by power and
getting
other
to
things.
And fro.
And so we want to get an update on tomatoes and what we should be doing, and we'll do that after we take a break here on the WPTF Weekend Gardener. Mike Raley here, along with Gerald Adams and Brother Rufus on the Weekend Gardener. It's 8:19. I'm pretty sure we're back. Rufus, you there?
I want Gerald.
Yes, sir.
Craig has the Rufus tomato, and I think Gerald, that he wanted you to grow it, if you would do that for me.
Okay. I got some seed, a few seed left from last year.
Okay. Yes.
Just looking for that ultimate Rufus tomato.
But I never got a good one out of Craig.
So I'll grow it out this year because I just started doing the tomato seed trays the last few days.
You might get some demand for that out of the farmer's market.
And as I'm going through sowing the trays for this year, I make notes of the ones that I need to plant to grow to save seed because I'm getting low on seed for the future. And I'll grow that out and stick that in with this summer's grow list. Maybe we can get some for you to gnaw on and check out.
Right.
Pass judgment on.
Absolutely.
I've had taste testings in the past, I tell you that.
Everybody, all the tomato lovers just long for June and July.
They're starting to get the shakes now.
I bet.
Because it's been a while since you've had one. You can see you can see the light at the end of the tunnel now.
Yeah.
So
they're eating mayonnaise by themselves. Mayonnaise and loaf bread.
I've got the Gladys tomato up about 4 inches under some little glow light.
Mm-hmm.
So we started a little bit early, but that's okay.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I hope that works out well.
Did we do any kind of investigation into this, whoever it is that's bought Duke's mayonnaise? I have concerns about that.
I don't know. I think we should because it's getting farther and farther away from the family idea. I think, you know, this lady in down in South Spartanburg, Greenville area starts it with her recipe, and then the Sauer family in Richmond buys a recipe, and I mean for generations they've had it. So we'll have to look at this and do a lot of tasting.
Just don't ask Nelson. She would have no interest in any kind of mayo.
That's true. She would not be eating loaf bread and mayonnaise by itself or with a tomato or with bacon and tomato. So
I'm right. Shaking my head for people, but
I see you right now.
I kind of like a Nanner sandwich with some mayonnaise, too, some Duke's mayonnaise. We don't talk about that. I like that, too.
On a hamburger with lettuce and tomato.
Yeah.
And Duke's mayonnaise.
All of that. No hot dog, right? You can't have a hot dog and a mayonnaise.
No,
you don't do that, do you, Rufus?
That won't work.
No.
George won't allow that either.
Or he won't allow the ketchup.
He won't allow the ketchup or the mayonnaise. No, sir.
Which suits me. I don't eat ketchup on a hot dog, but it frets my wife. She's going to have ketchup on her hot dog.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. Does she put anything else on there?
She'll put mustard on there, and she'll put chili on there, and sometimes slaw. She's not an onion fan on her hot dog.
Yeah.
Unlike
myself. Well, she wants to kiss you later.
Well.
The onions get in the way, but not with Rufus. Mustard, slaw, chili, and onions every time.
Yeah.
All right. Richard is with us. Richard, good morning. You're on WPTF's Weekend Gardener, sir.
Good morning, y'all. Well, sometimes in life, the right combination of people and plants that just come along at the right time. And one of our neighbors, Dr. Cathario, was a food scientist, and she brought us a kogi nut squash, and I've never heard of one before, but one of the neighbors, and I took it to Moorhead City with me, and one of the neighbors fixed it, and it was the best squash I've ever eaten.
Now that's a kogi nut?
Kogi nut.
Anybody in the group here ever heard of that? Rufus, you ever heard of a kogi nut squash?
I'm intrigued.
I have heard of it, but is it a winter type squash? I mean, one knows that grows, takes forever to make.
I'm pretty sure it's a cross between butternut and something else. I didn't know they made something, a squash that tastes that good. It makes all the other squash taste like, well, as a scale, they're eunuchs compared to the kogi nut.
I'm not sure we can say that, though.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture now online. So mm-hmm. It looks a little bit, you know, kind of like a butternut squash.
Richard, hold on here a minute. We got to go take a look at the news, and we'll be back, my friend,
right,
on the Weekend Gardener. We're back on WPTF, the Weekend Gardener, at 8:33, and Mike Rayleigh here, along with Gerald Adams, Brother Rufus, feeling better, I think, but, you know, when you have the grip.
Yeah, got the temper.
Distemper.
Black, all you supposed to take it easy.
That's right. Well, that's what we want you to do, is take it easy. So just like the Eagles, one of my favorite songs. So you're in a position there in the easy chair where you can look out on some things, or
yep, I'm looking at that say, and Sergeant.
Professor Sergeant Camellia?
Yes, sir. It's just gone crazy.
Oh, wow. It's been a good year.
I think that's my favorite.
I think it's my favorite, too.
It's hard to beat.
Yeah. Looks like, as Gomer would say, a corsage.
And I like the white by the gate too. That's a pure white one that's got that double bloom. This
Rufus has got one not far from his gate.
Yeah. What it's cold weather though, Gerald, the white wheels turn sort of rough.
Yep. Yeah.
But that's the price you gotta pay.
Is that the whitiest white?
It's white, but what I like about it is that double ruffled bloom.
Yeah.
On it. That's what really.
Yeah,
it doesn't have the little yellow button center like some of the other ones.
But it's more like the Professor Sargent design.
Yeah.
Your brother Richard is with us, and we were talking about squash. Now,
tell me how that was prepared, Richard.
It was baked with just a little garlic, salt, and pepper, and butter. Simple as that. And she was so impressed with it that she washed and dried the seeds, and is going to hope to grow some this year. And it's got a texture kind of like a sweet potato and the color of a sweet potato.
It's kind of pumpkin looking too.
Yeah, and now the neighbors' dogs are experts in pumpkins. They've got some large bulldogs.
Well, they got a whole one in their mouth, probably.
Yeah, and so they look forward to Thanksgiving when all the pumpkins are about. But it was funny, I looked over there one day, and the dog's head was inside the pumpkin.
They're like hogs.
Yeah.
Well, that's hogs rooting around. And
of course, you have to watch your step in the yard afterwards.
I'm sure. My goodness. Well, I don't know. I think Gerald and I agree. We're more of the crook neck, straight neck, yeller squash type. But the winter squash are kind of ornamental. They're pretty, and they do. You know, some have really good flavor.
Well, I thought the crook neck was what they liked in Washington D.C.
Well, I don't know. Rufus is closest thing we have to a politician. Do you agree with that?
I'm recovering. You know that.
At any rate.
Hopefully, tomato-wise, I'm going to be doing a soil test here soon because it takes a while for the soil to get adjusted.
That's
properly.
A very good point. You do need soil tests, and you know it's not unheard of to start preparing the soil with and getting a soil test in the fall, and putting lime and that type of stuff in there. So,
and hopefully our friendly neighborhood tomato provider will have plenty of red snappers.
Yep, sure will. I did. A plug tray yesterday of them, and I'll do another plug tray in about a week. So a plug tray is 128 plants. So
red snapper, the new
red snapper is a red slicing hybrid, and it's got considerable more disease resistance than most other tomatoes, but it tastes pretty good. So that sets it apart for a hybrid. And this is probably the third year that I've been growing, and I doubled last year what I grew from the year before and sold out, and I'm going to double again this year from it. So for people,
well, the slice is big enough.
One slice will take care of a piece of bread.
All right.
So it's, but it has been well received, and Richard is one of about 15 people that have mentioned to me, don't forget to grow that, which I'm not going to forget.
Rufus, have you tried a red snapper?
No, I haven't. I just get so excited. Gerald, as I said, my little seedlings are up now about 3 inches tall. Is it time for just a tiny bit of fertilizer?
No, let them get a little bit bigger than that. It might be time to put the fan on them. If you're growing them indoors, the danger is they're trying to stretch and find the sunlight, and they'll want to get spindly and little skinny stems and trying to stretch up. And putting a very low power oscillating fan with just a little bit of wind touching them, they will thicken the stems up to be able to support themselves better because of that wind. And you'll end up with a healthier plant doing that.
Well, and just remember, with the disease resistant tomato, the tomato in the hand is worth two not on the bush.
Okay. All right. Considering inflation.
Yeah. And the other thing it was interesting, I have some leftover shishito pepper plants that I just let go to seed. And about the time Gerald mentioned in his last show that he was starting his seeds, when next time I walked by the plants, they'd already dropped the seeds. Mm-hmm. So the keen observer, Gerald, nature will tell you what to do.
That's right.
Well, Brother Richard, you take her easy now.
All right. Y'all have a great one.
All right. We'll see. I think we just lost Rufus. I don't know where Rufus is.
Uh-oh. Somebody find him.
He's just run out the door. All right. More of the Weekend Gardener.
Right. Come,
take it easy, Richard.
All right.
Talk
Bye.
To you next
Bye.
Time. Bye. We'll be back. All right, we're back on WPTF at 8:43. Mike Raley with you on WPTF's Weekend Gardener. And Gerald Adams is with us. Brother Rufus is on the phone here. 919-860-9783, 919-860-WPTF. Dadgummit, what was I going to – you know, we had the folks, one of our sponsors mentioned lawn grass. And for folks who have fescue, we're getting up to pretty close to Valentine's Day, and that's around the time when we put out a little bit of fertilizer.
Yes, I always fertilize my fescue one more good time sometime in February. If we've had a warm January, which we did not this
year.
We
did not.
I would do it around the first early February. If we've had a average kind of winter, I would do it, you know, middle of February. And if we've had a super duper cold one and still having some below normal temperatures in early February, I might would make to the latter part of February. But yeah, it needs, you know, it's sitting there twiddling its thumbs right now, waiting for the weather to break. And when the weather finally warms up, it's ready to take off, because, you know, the fall and spring are really its primary growing season. It struggles in the summer because of the heat and humidity. It struggles a little right now because it's just a little too cold. So you need to have some nitrogen there to get it jumping.
Yeah. It's hard to find fertilizer, lawn fertilizer, that doesn't have a lot of nitrogen in it. And I think the Extension Service still recommends a rate of 16:4:8, and the 16 is the nitrogen.
Mm-hmm. If you get, I mean, it's sometimes difficult at the box stores to find that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's ungodly expensive. If you get into almost all of the horticulture suppliers will sell to the public, Site One, Green Resources. And they're going to, I mean, they're carrying all of the turf fertilizers and the ones that have iron added to them and all that. And sometimes they're not really any more expensive than what you see at the box stores, but it's a much better product.
Do you come down on the side of using iron? I know ironite is has been fairly popular.
I like the little bit added to the turf fertilizer, and it's not really it doesn't jack the price, like, you know, makes it way more expensive on there. It's just it's going to help green up, and sometimes, you know, you can do everything like you're supposed to, but when you have as cold a temperature as we had this winter, your fescue's not real green right now. Mm-hmm. It can have a little bit of yellow or pale or green to the color, and that's going to help green it up as well as the nitrogen. So it's just a little, you know, double kick to get it going.
Yeah, and don't mess with your warm season. More and more people are
yeah, the only
planting.
Thing with warm season, you're getting on the time for pre-emergence. So no fertilizer yet, but it's pretty close to time for put out that first round of pre-emergence.
And I guess for fescue, too.
Yes, yes.
So don't, I mean, which you run into a quandary if you haven't had good luck with your fescue. You have a tendency to want to try to replant some, put out more seed. You're not going to be able to do that with the pre-emergence.
No, and to be honest with you, you're almost wasting your time to put out fescue seed in the spring anyway. Yes, it's going to come up, but it's not going to establish enough of a root system before it gets 90 plus in the summer, and it'll just it'll go away.
We know we're going to get a, have a hot summer, but we don't always know we're going to have a. I mean, don't you, expect a cold winter.
You see the fescue in the fall, September, October, even I've done it sometimes in November before. But you seed fescue in March or April, you've just, you know, you've thrown that money right out the window.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah, Brother Rufus.
I have a question, Gerald. Phil gave me a big bag of wild seed, and I threw some out last fall. I noticed it came up. And is it too early to do some of the wild seed? Because I'm going to turn some of these spots around the yard. I'm going to dig it, gently dig it up and try to plant wildflowers.
Well, it depends a little bit, Rufus, on the type of wildflowers it is. So if you don't know the what varieties of wildflowers in there, then I would probably wait till maybe the at least another month to early March, middle of March, because some of those wildflowers are not going to want to have a frost on them. There are some other things that bloom, you know, late winter, early spring. But like, say, most of the stuff that you see that the DOT uses beside the roads, that's really going to be something that's going to be seeded a little bit later than right now.
Okay.
It never hurts to throw out a handful to see what's going to happen. But if you couldn't research, you know, if it didn't have a list of all the different cultivars of wildflower in there, then I would wait just a little bit longer, a little bit warmer soil temperature, and not have them come up where they're going to have a freeze on them.
What I intend to do is dig it up just a little bit. I've got one of those turn forks.
Yep.
And just a little. And then come back with about a half an inch of just broadcasting dirt on top.
You can, and make sure not to get it too deep. You can be even fine with a quarter of an inch can be a plenty. Because most of those seed, all they need to do is just cover it up just a little bit.
Okay, good. I want to turn this place into a wildflower mecca.
That'd be great. That'd be great. How much sun do you need for wildflowers?
It can varies considerably depending, once again, on what kind of mix you're mm-hmm. sowing. There are some of the mixes that are going to want more than 6 hours a day of sun. But I have seen some before that it's kind of like they advertise some of the grass, shady nook or something like that's what they call them, where they need, you know, if they just got some filtered light, that they would probably be okay. But the more of the ones you see probably need, you know, a decent amount of sun.
All right, Rufus. Well, I look forward to seeing that.
Well, we'll try it for the little garden party.
Lady Bird Johnson would be proud of you.
I remember when she worked on Capitol Hill. Here is a wildflower. I'm looking at it and trying to get some in here, some kinds. Lace leaf. Coreopsis, cosmos, marigold, sunflower, golden mane coreopsis, large flower coreopsis, black-eyed Susan, mixed corn poppy, red corn poppy, rocket lick larkspur, and sulfur cosmos.
So everything you've just called out is going to be a warmer weather bloomer. Now, there are some of those that could bloom in May, but definitely June and later. So I probably would wait till at least maybe the 15th or 20th of March before sowing them. And you wouldn't be out of kelter if it was the 1st of April when you sowed them. But there's not anything in that group that's going to bloom like, you know, the 1st of March.
You want to put them out there right now, don't you? I know.
But that's a good mix, Rufus. That's some. And a lot of those ones you just mentioned will bloom early for warm weather, and the blooms will turn into seed, fall on the ground, and they'll bloom again into the summer and early fall.
Good.
All righty. Skip is with us. Skip, good morning. How's everything at Asbury Methodist?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. The garden looks like it's in the middle of winter, so that's a good thing. You know?
Yeah.
I can't say we got much corn or tomato growing right now, but it'll be coming.
Yeah.
This is actually a personal lawn question.
All right.
Our lawn service put down some fertilizer pre-emergent a few days ago. I've got a little spot in the lawn. It's not 1 square foot that I'd like to put some feed down just because it's really thin. If I scratch up that area, will that break the pre-emergent barrier enough that I could actually get some seed to grow, or am I just pretty much going to have to live with that the summer until the fall?
Are there certain pre-emergent chemicals that work?
No, there's no pre-emergence chemical that can tell the difference in a weed seed and a grass seed.
All right.
Now, two things happen. One, you can water the bejesus, just flood that area with water trying to push that pre-emergence farther down into the soil, or you can buy you a piece of sod and throw down and you won't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I've got some sod, and it's just around the perimeter of the sod, but that sounds like maybe the best answer, just buy another roll of sod.
Yeah, just get a couple. The pre-emergence is not going to affect the sod. It won't bother the roots on the sod. But I've sometimes had success doing it, and sometimes I've just thrown my hands up in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Do you know whether or not they put out a liquid or a granular?
It's granular. I'm pretty sure I saw them spread it, so it's a granular.
Yeah, and that's probably makes it even a little more difficult.
Yeah, because it's going to break down slowly.
Yeah, you've got to get that to break down, and then you've got to try to flush it to get it to move, and it's a real iffy procedure at best.
Sounds like the farmer's market and super sod is in my future.
Absolutely. They'll take care of you. And get some breakfast while you're out
and
there.
And you get what I call, when you put the sod down, you get what I call instant gratification. You don't have to wait for the outcome.
For sure.
Well, you would think so. The downside is it's an area right around a bird feeder, which is really just a code for a raccoon feeder. and the raccoons will tear up the sod trying to get at the seed that has spilled out of the feeder. I've watched that on a camera, and it's just pretty impressive how destructive they can be.
Yeah. Rufus has had one in his doghouse before.
Well,
oh, my gosh. Is it like a pet?
No. It was not supposed to be there, was it, Rufus?
No.
I don't know if that's part of the recovery program for politicians or not.
No, not dealing with raccoons.
Well, this particular one that I'm working on right now, I've got to outfox him or outcoon him. I have a composter that is a barrel, and you roll it, and there's a slide across the top. Well, that sucker can turn this thing over, pull the door off, pull out, and I'm going to get out there. Couple crowbars and see if I can outsmart him.
Right.
Well, Rufus, you were skilled at dealing with raccoons in a previous career, so I would think you'd be able to handle
it. Well, that's true. That's true. I agree.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. That's super helpful.
Thank you, Skip.
Great, Skip.
All right. Do we need to take a break here, Joel? Or all right, we'll take a quick break. Well, why don't we just take a – I'll tell you what, you need a couple of minutes for us. We'll talk a few seconds here. Gerald, maybe 30 seconds, any new types of warm season grass, zoysia that might need a little bit less light? Sunlight.
I mean, there's lots of work on it, and you know I see glimmers of stuff, but I mean I can't really say. I mean, you know, NC State's got a new they've got a St. Augustine out that may be an improvement over Raleigh, which can take maybe less sun than any of the other warm season grasses.
We'll be back.